From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, I'm Arun Roth. Welcome to Consider This, from Boston, where a federal judge has ruled the city's exam schools can keep temporary changes to their admissions policies. This after a lawsuit was filed challenging the changes. More on what this means for students, their families, and their schools is GBH's education reporter, Meg Woolhouse. Hey, Meg.
Hey, Arun.
So, first, how did the exam schools admit students before, and how is the policy different now?
So Boston's three exam schools are its highest performing and most prestigious schools. For many years, the admissions process remained the same and involved three factors: a GPA score, a standardized test score, and the applicant's school preference. Administrators would assign a numeric value to the applicant's grades in English, language arts, and math. This GPA numeric value was added to the applicant's standardized test score, creating a composite score by which the applicants were ranked. The student with the highest composite score received an invitation to his or her first choice of the exam schools. If the student's first choice was full, the student was placed in his or her next choice, and so on.
That seems, as far as these things go, pretty straightforward. What were the issues that parents were having with this?
Well, the lawsuit was filed on behalf of white and Asian students and their parents who alleged discrimination under the new plan. The suit argued that the plan was unconstitutionally race-based system, saying that it put white and Asian students at a disadvantage. Under the plan, 20% of seats in Boston Latin School, Boston Latin Academy, and the John D. O'Brien School of Mathematics and Science would be filled in rank order by grade point averages achieved before the pandemic. The remaining 80% would be allocated to students with qualifying GPAs based on their zip code. Kids who live in the lowest income zip codes could get to choose first. So the Virginia lawyer representing the parents argued that the use of zip codes was, quote unquote, a sham to achieve desired racial results.
And what are the schools and people who were in favor of the changes? What was their counterargument to that?
Well, they argued, and the judge agreed, that the plan was race neutral. The lawyer for the school said racial equity was a concern in the crafting of the zip code plan, but there are other concerns too, like offering an entrance exam during the pandemic. She said the district had also sought to create opportunities for homeless students and those for low-income families under the temporary measure. What they came up with was a plan to allocate seats to each zip code based on the number of school-aged children there. Homeless students and young people under state supervision would be grouped together and get the very first choice in the rounds to fill most of the seats. But essentially, they viewed the lawsuit as a pretext for maintaining the unequal status quo. For example, some lower schools had been inflating grade point averages in ways that ended up helping more white students to attend these schools. That was a point the judge noted multiple times in his ruling.
Now, this change to the policy is temporary, but there's been a push by some to move permanently away from these types of admission tests and standardized testing in general. Do you see something like this becoming permanent?
Well, there does seem to be support for moving away permanently from standardized testing because it's seen as an instrument of racism and institutional bias. And of course, that bias hurts the academic success of low-income students and students of color. It's hard to say what will happen next, but there's definitely a growing movement across the country to resist standardized testing. In Boston, the district created a working group a couple months ago to look at permanent changes to the exam school admissions policy. I imagine that this decision will factor heavily into their plans going forward, so I would say stay tuned.
Meg, this is a great reporting. Thanks for talking us through all the twists and turns of it.
Thanks for having me.
That's GBH education reporter Meg Woolhouse. Before I go, I should tell you what else is up in Boston. A man from Maine is being charged with federal hate crime offenses for allegedly burning down a Springfield church with a predominantly black congregation. Dushko Volchev is currently being held at Bridgewater State Hospital pending trial. Dr. Terilyn Curry Avery is pastor of the church that was attacked, the Martin Luther King Jr. Community Presbyterian Church. She says having some insight into the fire has given her a little relief.
That we're drawing at least toward understanding what happened and understanding why this happened to us.
She says her congregation is in the early stages of rebuilding the church. Back in Boston, a group of mothers whose sons were killed by police and about 100 other people gathered last night to mark the death of Daunte Wright, who was shot by a police officer in Minnesota last weekend. The group called for charges in local killings like that of Burrell Ramsey White, who was shot and killed by Boston police in 2012. Ramsey White's mother, Carla Sheffield, says little has changed since then.
You haven't stopped killing folks. You haven't stopped killing our black babies. You haven't got any training. You haven't changed the immunity laws. You haven't done a damn thing.
And changing gears as we roll into the long weekend, we have some fun news for fans of the indie band Morphine, the group from Cambridge with the slow, low sound that attained global recognition in the late 80s and 90s. Lead singer Mark Sandman's life was cut short when he died of a heart attack in 1999. But it turns out that Sandman left behind a trove of recordings from music he made prior to Morphine in clubs around Cambridge with a self-described secret band called the Hypnosonics. Mike Riverd is a jazz bassist who auditioned for the Hypnosonics in 1987.
Mark would end every show telling everybody not to tell anybody that they had seen the band, which was, you know, a joke. But it also, I think, gave it kind of a feeling of we're in on some secret that no one else knows about, and let's keep it that way.
Riverd combed through the archives to pull songs for two new Hypnosonic albums, which were released today. They're called Someone Stole My Shoes, Beyond the Q Division Sessions, and Drums Were Beating, Fort Apache Studios, 1996. Here's some of that.
Drums were beating when I woke up this morning. Well, the drums were beating when I got up to bed.
From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, the greatest combo since music and archiving, I'm Arun Roth. We're taking Monday off, but my co-host Paris will be back with you on Tuesday. Speaking of podcasts, here's one more you might enjoy. From the producers of GBH's Antiques Roadshow, Detours is a podcast about what happens to all those antiques after the cameras leave town. Join Adam Monahan, longtime producer of Roadshow, for stories of sales, fakes, and even federal crimes. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.